the show.
Well, hey everyone, welcome to this week's episode of The Boundless Show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson. Later on in the show, we have an inbox question being answered by one of our fabulous counselors. The question is, will guarding my heart keep me from getting hurt? Yeah, right. No, I'm just kidding. No, we're going to offer something more hopeful than that, hopefully. So then for our culture segment, also a hopeful segment, because we're talking about pornography again, which is a big downer, unless you have watched the documentary, The Heart of the Matter, which is super encouraging as far as what's going on in the realm of healing for those who have experienced pornography addiction. So real life stories, awesome, awesome stuff. Daniel Weiss is going to be here to talk to us about that. And I'm not sure if this roundtable is going to be hopeful. We're gonna talk about leagues and dating again, but this time from the women's perspective. So you heard from the men and what they think about dating leagues. And I approach this as though they just do exist and they're inevitable. So I don't even know that that's really, I mean, some people may beg to differ, but I think whatever you call it and whatever degree there is, there's some kind of, you know, people have this vague perception of who they are or are not eligible to date and or who they should or shouldn't be dating. So we're gonna go ahead and jump into this. So fortunately, we have Bree, Jenny, and Martha here. Hey, ladies.
Hi. Hello.
Fabulous, who are more than eager to talk about this subject, especially because they know that sometimes I just go crazy places with these questions and there's no telling, you know, really what I may pin them with. So there's always a good time in that. So we're going to jump right into it, ladies, with a discussion of this, because I know that we've all been in one way or another affected by this conversation. So my first question for y'all is just, what in general is your perception of dating leagues, you know, dating in or out of your league? Do you think that they affect men and women differently? How so? And how maybe would you take them, you know, personally, like as you, if you had to define it in your own experience?
I think it's probably harder for guys in the fact that, from a female's perspective, because they're constantly like, oh, she's more beautiful than this girl. And so I think that they're more prone to put girls in physical leagues of she's way too pretty for me, or she's okay. I mean, I could totally date somebody like that. Mm-hmm. Whereas girls, for me, I would put guys in leagues as far as their social acumen. Mm-hmm. Well, he understands that he's got manners, or he's just a doofus, or, you know, so you kind of put that, this guy's definitely, you know, Jersey Shore stupid versus like, oh, I could totally take this guy home to mom and dad and it'd be totally fine. So that's kind of how I put people when I was dating into leagues. And so it was like, okay, is this going to be approved by mom and dad, or is this one that I'm going to hide in the closet and just date and have fun with, kind of thing?
Yeah. So I'm not even sure if I would put the please mom and dad thing with it. I would just say, are they by my own standards, like cool or, you know, whatever, whether that includes, are they successful? Are they smart? Are they all those other kind of intangibles tend to make it on my list, I think. Mm-hmm.
But that's on your parents' list, though. So your parents, like, have a league that they probably perceive that you should be.
Well, sadly, I don't know that there's anything on my parents' list anymore. So I'm just kind of. Yeah, I'm not even venturing into that territory. Yeah, so we maybe still have Believer on the list, but beyond that, we're not sure where it goes from there. So.
At first, I was thinking maybe guys have the advantage of they have this whole pool and they can just ask whatever girl they want. Mm-hmm. But really, they're subjected to the girl's evaluation, too, of accepting or not. Mm-hmm. So I think it really goes both ways of we all have to be realistic about where we're at and what you could catch, I guess. I don't think.
I kind of wonder, too, if it's like a competitive thing for guys. I mean, I'm not one, so I don't know. But, you know, if you see this, you know, you have two girls and you think, you know, I want to try to get this one. Mm-hmm. You know, is it kind of playing to that part of your personality to try to go for that? I don't know, but
yeah, they like the hunt and
And stuff. Like, I don't think I personally never had, you know, that kind of pressure. I guess that I was trying to figure out.
Yeah, I don't think I ever tried to compete with other girls for a better looking guy. But I'm sure. I mean, I had guy friends in college that were always like, "Well, she's just, you know, she's got a better butt, or she's got, you know, like silly things like that. And you're just thinking, why do you care about that? Like, right. She's dumb. Like, she doesn't even add correctly, so you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, I think there's a competition aspect for them in a certain stage. I think when you get older and more mature, it's not about those silly things, but I definitely think that there is a time frame for guys when they think that's really important about what other people care about and think about. Mm-hmm. And then you get to a point where you're like, it really only matters what I think about and what I care about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think that goes with your level of maturity too. Right. I think dating leagues really have everything to do with a sense of maturity.
Yeah. On both parts. And it goes so much deeper than the physical thing. You know, I mean, it might be the initial, you know, thing that you're looking at or perceiving, but I think especially as women, it goes so much more beyond that. And I think you're looking pretty quickly at what is beyond that. So,
mm-hmm. Okay, so here's where we're just going to get into the practicality of this. Knowing that leagues do exist, let's say that we numbered them from 1 to 5.
Can we do 1 to 10? 5 is such a short number.
We can do 1 to 10. You guys want to do 1 to 10? I don't care.
Okay. I'm that makes my number. Hold on.
Yeah.
It's not a scientific study.
Throwing you off, Martha.
If there were 10 leagues out there and you had to be in one of them, what number league would you be in? And here's the caveat. I don't want this to be by your estimation. I want you to be in the head of a guy. What league would he put you in?
How are we supposed to know what guys think about us?
Yeah, that's really hard.
No, this is like, no, I mean, to say, so you can't, I mean, because you know that you have good quality. You can't just say, because I really love the Lord and I whatever. So I'm just, you know, I mean, this is someone who doesn't know you. So just, but I'm not saying, so it's not only looks, but if a guy met you at a party based on your, whatever, appearance, grooming, social skills, just who you are, but not, you know, I've remained debt-free for 10 years. He's not going to know that. Who cares? What is your number? I want to know what league you're in.
Well, how about you start, Lisa?
Yeah.
No, I'm asking the questions.
Yeah.
Now that it's made from 1 to 10, I have to rethink. I have to think of my thing. Well, here's my thing. As I was thinking about it, I would definitely put myself in different leagues at different stages of my life. Mm-hmm. So I think that number has changed for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think women are notorious for way downgrading ourselves, first of all. So I think we're all going to have lower number. Mm-hmm. The minute someone says a number, everyone else at this table is going to be like, that is so ridiculous. You're so amazing. You know, girls just do that. So we're going to get...
That's why we need a guy in here. We
yeah, we need Anthony in here. Anthony would totally tell us. I don't even want to know. I would say, okay, so if we were going like 1 to 10, I would... I would give myself a 7.
Good for you, Lisa.
On a good day. I would give myself a 7.
A good day, like if you brush your teeth, is that like a good day? What do you mean?
No, I would say I would say maybe in a good month when I felt like I had maybe lost 5 pounds to 10 and had my hair together and had...
So you base your league on how much you weigh, though. You're saying your physical appearance and those kinds of things.
I would say objectively, I just feel that has something to do with it. But here's what also I think plays into it, which is why I feel like, you know, if I looked objectively at it, my number would be going down. I think age plays into it. Mm. I think my number bumps up because I think I have good social skills. I have good conversation skills. I'm funny, whatever. So I think that helps me in other... I mean, I think I could easily walk through and give myself a little tally that would push the needle in either direction. But I would give myself... I mean, I would say I've almost never ventured into the 8 to 10 range. And I never will.
So. And why do you say that?
Yeah. Because I would evaluate who I would have in my head who I know are 8 to 10s, and I would just say I'm not them.
Mm-hmm. And what makes them an 8 to 10?
I think there are a lot of things like a certain type of personality that I think is more attractive to guys, even though I know guys like all different types of women. I'm talking in generalities here. But like the key, you know, I've always talked about the girl, like the, I don't know, just the... I don't know. I have to think about that. Maybe I'll have to come back to that. But who else? What are your...
I think it really depends on what the party or context is. Mm-hmm. I mean, as I'm visualizing it in my mind, and really what you're doing is comparing yourself to who else is in the room.
Mm-hmm.
So,
which we all do.
I'll just pass this on to Jenny to answer next.
No, Martha. Hey, you're in the room, Martha. What's your number? You've already thought about the room.
In this room?
No, not this room.
In the room of the world. You have to compare yourself to the whole world.
The world.
You can't pass.
The world as you know it.
Well, okay. I'll say a 6 because on the 1 to 5, I was thinking maybe 3.5. I think slightly above average, but
it's a very safe.
Do I have to say anything more?
Safe number.
Are you done?
Yes.
Oh.
Go for it.
Okay. Well, I was in the very same thing. I was thinking 3.5 on a good day, 6 on a 10-point scale. You know, and I just the very same reasons you guys have said. I would love to be like 6 inches taller. I think that would bump up maybe a point or so. I don't know. I mean, I think we're always harder on ourselves. I asked my fiance about the 5-point scale, and he's like, "Oh, just say a 7." I'm like, "Oh, that's sweet, but I don't think you're quite."
He better say that.
No, he should have said, just say 11.
I don't know.
Which is funny because Martha, wouldn't you say? I mean, what would you say about the height thing? Would you say, oh, if I were 2 inches shorter? Or do you not care? Do you think your height's a great thing?
No, I think my height is an advantage.
I do, too. Mm-hmm.
Really? I never would have thought of that.
In fact, you're probably shorter, a 6.5.
An advantage in that, I think...
height gives you a 6.5.
Well, I don't know.
How tall are you?
I'm 5'10".
Oh, you got long legs. Yeah, that is an advantage. True. Point taken, Martha. Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's too funny.
I mean, there's maybe fewer guys who are actually taller than me, but I think in general, I think guys like tall women.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
You've met a lot of shorties?
Short guys?
Yes.
Not necessarily, no. But like the average height for anybody is probably shorter than what I am for men and women. Yeah, like it's... Huh. The average is not 5'10".
Do you think it's difficult to find a tall guy?
No.
Yeah, probably not.
I don't think so.
But it's definitely like a prerequisite, usually.
You want someone who's taller than you or at your height?
It is not a deal breaker. But I do, I mean, I think naturally you're going to find someone who's your height or taller as more attractive. Mm-hmm. I think that's a natural thing.
Mm-hmm. All right, okay, Bree, what about you?
Notice how I keep asking questions. I don't want to answer this question.
Let's kill you now.
I would put myself probably in different categories at different stages of my life. My personality is really strong, and I think some guys really like that, and other guys are like, don't want to mess with that. She's way too bold, way too opinionated, way too headstrong. So I think for different guys, I would be in different leagues.
And your number is?
So what would your number be?
Or what's the range?
I think on a good day, a 6 to a 7, I think. I think I'm really outgoing and I'm spontaneous and I like to do all kinds of activities and I'm kind of up for anything. And I'm not afraid of much. I'm pretty bold. But I also, that can be such a huge turnoff, I think, to some people too. Mm-hmm. I think some guys see that as kind of threatening, like in your face and, oh, please let me lead and that kind of stuff. So... And I definitely think there are girls that are way better looking than I am, and for all various kinds of reasons. So I think I kind of am like, yeah, I'm not completely unfortunate looking, but I'm definitely not gorgeous. I'm definitely not like her over there. So I can, you know, I kind of see like, wow, she's kind of the cream of the crop as far as looks go. And definitely there's people that are way funnier. Like Lisa Anderson, than I am, and, you know, have that kind of...
But that's what's interesting, because I am funny, but I've gone... And I, like I said, I mean, I think for me, it was almost like stepping out to give myself a 7, because I would say, you know, I'll wake up and I'll be like, oh my word, I look terrible.
Well, if we're talking about wake up leagues,
like, I'm definitely
but then I'm saying like I wake up and I'm like, wow, that's really bad. But then I like put some makeup on and I'm like, okay, I can go out like this. You know, and so it's feel like you kind of patch yourself together or whatever. But at the same time, after giving myself a 7, I mean, there are like I've had seasons where I've dated a lot. I also have seasons where no one has asked me out, including guys that I would put 4 leagues below me. And I'm just like, oh, now something's not right with this picture.
Well, it's just because they're, you know, not as intelligent, so they wouldn't know they really needed to ask.
Well, that doesn't go with my theory, though, that guys always, like, go for someone out of their league, generally.
Oh, that's your theory.
Yeah, that's my theory, that they try for that, which was why keeps many of them not asking women out, you know, or not dating a lot of women. I don't know. That's just my theory. Maybe we'll have to go back to the guys on that one. And,
do you think guys are unrealistic, then, about their... about the league that they place themselves in?
I think generally. I think guys are much more likely to put themselves in a higher league, and women are much more likely to downgrade themselves. Yeah. Women are much harder on themselves, I think, generally.
So wouldn't that even out then, you think? I rate myself high, I rate myself low, you kind of meet in that average middle then. Like, wouldn't you think that that cancels out, like the high and the low, then everybody should be meeting about the same space?
Well, I think what it does is it makes happen what's actually happening, and that's that guys, you know, like I say, the TV guy, all these guys who are like kind of the sketchy, you know, maybe not well put together, maybe not well spoken, whatever, dating women who are attractive intelligent. Intelligent and whatever, because they just don't feel that they can get a good guy or whatever. I don't know.
My mother always told me that I had way too high of standards, which is, I'm like, thanks, Mom. Like, I thought you wanted me to have high standards. Yeah. I thought that was a good thing. So she'd always be like, what are your standards? And I would tell her, you know, I want a believer, I want a leader, I need, you know, I'd go down the list, and she'd be like, those are good things, but I think your bar is a little too high. And I'm just thinking, well, I'm supposed to have a high bar, am I not? And I think maybe what she was getting at was, you know, no one's going to meet absolutely every checkpoint on the list. You got to come down to the essentials. Like, what are the core? And it's like, believer, character, throw some chemistry in there. I mean, but.
So have any of you dated guys where you were kind of like, I'm kind of embarrassed to be dating this guy or to be seen with him, and or the reverse? Have you dated a guy and been like, what does this guy see in me? He's much more attractive than I am, or successful than I am, or whatever.
Oh, yeah. I dated a lot of doofuses, for sure. Like the ones that I would not want to bring around my parents or like my friends. Where are you going to hang out? Oh, I'm just, you know, going to go have some coffee. And then I'm like riding off somewhere down the street. And it's like, oh, there went Brie with, who is she with again? And it's, yeah. And then I did have a guy that I dated who was, in my opinion, totally out of my league from a physical perspective. Like he was, you know, just model, symmetric, the whole deal. And he ended up calling it off, and one of his friends was like, he is such an idiot. And I was like, well, you're just being nice. And he's like, no, really, like, personally, like, his personality and the way he thinks, he's dumb. Like, he's just, yeah, he's so much into the physical. Like, you can't put him in that league because he's beautiful and he knows it. And then that means he automatically drops three or four leagues because he can't, his his personality, his maturity level just doesn't match that whole picture.
Yeah. I don't know. I always hate the whole idea of leagues, honestly. Like, I hate thinking of it in those terms. But yes, technically I've dated people that would probably be below. But I feel like it's kind of more just from a perspective of, I want to get to know this person just in case they might come up on the league scale, you know, like,
well, missional dating.
No, it's not like
that. From the minors to the majors.
No, it's more like, am I being so judgmental that I don't know this person for who they
you're
are?
Mature. You
know
what I get mean? It.
What's that?
I said, you're mature. Okay, got it. You're actually giving someone a chance.
Okay, good point. Good point.
Yeah, but, you know, it's awkward. And then it's awkward when, you know, you realize, okay, this is not going to work out. This is just not it, and so what do you do then? So
I am aspiring to be more like Jenny in 2015 because I think I have a little bit of that competitive edge in me where I want to maybe just a little bit out of my league because I want to marry up. I mean, who doesn't, you know?
I love you, Mark.
Well, I did too, don't get me wrong.
Yeah, I don't know. But I want it to be, I mean, I think it goes way beyond just looks of what puts you in a certain league. And I think for believers, it's oftentimes you're rating people on, well, do they go to church on Sunday mornings, Sunday nights, and Wednesdays? You know, how much do they tithe? And how are they volunteering? And you can, I can often determine, you know, whether someone's in my league based on those things. But I really do want to see more of the heart of what are the fruits of the spirit that I'm seeing in them, that that's what I am basing on whether I want to get to know them or not. And it's not a checklist of whether it's height or how much you give, but really the heart. So.
Okay. Well, wow, we like didn't even scratch the surface here. That is very disappointing. So we have to do four more shows on this.
But
this is good. Well, we'll go ahead and continue the conversation on the blog. How about if we say that? So everyone, like ladies and men, with whatever you've heard here, help us weigh in. We would love to hear from you. This is just our initial thoughts on this, but great thoughts, good thoughts going into 2015.
Yes, and we actually have an article coming out on Monday, January 12th, I believe, called Stop Shopping for a Spouse by Suzanne Gosselin. So that kind of touches on this, too, of having that consumeristic mindset mentality as we're looking for a spouse and how to combat that. So.
Yeah, I think it's something that's natural, but it's also something that we as believers can battle against in the sense of what truly is important. What does this look like? And how do we just be grateful to God for what he has given us in general, you know, and not feel entitled, not feel like we are better than other people, that we're judging other people against our own merits, which are nothing, you know. So good thoughts, ladies. Thanks.
London cab, her phone rings, but I can tell the news is bad before the first tear falls. No one wants the sorrow a call like this brings. The sorrow doesn't get the last word after all. We will rise like a bird upon the dawn.
Well, hey, everyone. Here we are for this week's culture segment, and very privileged to have Daniel Weiss with me on the phone. Hey, Daniel.
Hi, Lisa. How are you doing today?
I am doing well. It's great to have you back on the Boundless Show.
Oh, yeah. It's my pleasure. I love it.
Well, very cool. Many of you know, I mean, those of you that have been longtime listeners to the podcast, we've had Daniel on before. You know, he's always, in fact, he was here at Focus on the Family, a longtime analyst and expert on issues of sexuality. And what else, what did you specifically specialize in when you were here, Daniel? I mean, that was kind of it.
Well, the analyst team had a nickname for me, that your listeners might appreciate. They called me the porn king because I was the analyst on pornography and obscenity and broadcast indecency issues. So yeah, that's not one I put on the business card, but we got a good chuckle out of it.
You know, you always got to question people that choose to, you know, volunteer for the role of combing through obscenities and whatever else is going on out there. But that's okay. Someone's got to do it. And I am glad that it was you while you were here. And now you head up the Brushfire Foundation, correct?
That's right. That's right. In fact, a lot of the work I did at Focus really prepared me for this next stage of ministry. And just doing this with a separate nonprofit organization, continuing the great work I did with the team there at Focus.
Yeah, that's super cool. Well, speaking of recent work, one of the things that you have been very involved with is a documentary called The Heart of the Matter. Speaking of pornography, that's something that you're very passionate about, the way that the culture has redefined sexuality and our perception of it and cheapened it in a sense, both intentionally and unintentionally. And I watched the doc and appreciated so many of the different perspectives and the fact that it was a good mix of expert insight as well as couples that have and singles that have walked through addiction to pornography in various forms, including great perspectives from some women, and we're gonna delve into that as well. But can you start off, Daniel? Because I think, you know, it's one, and it's not that we haven't talked about pornography here at the Boundless Show, But we kind of need a little refresher from you to address, why is it? I mean, I think a lot of Christians are like, this is a dumb question, but why do Christians need to talk about pornography? I mean, what is not being said, whether in our culture by people who know this is a problem, or certainly in the church? What's not being said that's making this documentary necessary right now?
Right, right. That's a great question, Lisa. I think we just need to come out and say it. You know, pornography is now a part of the fabric of our lives, even among Christians. And maybe a few years ago, we didn't quite have the high-quality research to back that up. But just even in the past few months, we've seen a number of nationally representative surveys come out, and they all indicate that that outside the church and even inside the church, pornography is a significant influence. It's having a significant impact on people's lives, and it is for men particularly, but also for women. But our Christian young men in particular, but even as the Austin Institute study that just came out in December showed that pornography use only slightly declines even up into the age of 60. Hmm. So for men, this is a real problem. And what's not being talked about is the fact that we have a significant portion of Christian men that are influenced by a godless, even demonic sexuality, and that they're going to bring that in not just into their own relationships, but they're bringing that into their spiritual lives as well. And so we have, we are not having the conversation as a church and as a culture that we absolutely must have.
Yeah,
and I think that's why this documentary. That's why I'm so supportive of this documentary, because really, there's nothing out. There's a lot of material on pornography out there, but there's nothing like this documentary out there that addresses the issue so compassionately and does so excellently, really.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's interesting because I think, you know, a lot of especially Christian women that I talk to, I think are a little incredulous about, you know, they will say, and of course, you know, not that pornography isn't a problem for women, but they'll say, what are these Christian guys' problem? I mean, what is, you know, and I think they don't realize how casual our culture has made it so that many Christian men, you know, I know there are many different gateway means of getting into porn. I don't think there are a lot of Christian guys that are like, the one thing I want to do today is look at porn, or that's my priority. That's at the top of my to-do list, whatever. But you and I were talking about the recent Relationships in America survey that talked about, you know, surveying 16,000 people, and 20% of the male church attendees surveyed said that they had viewed porn in the previous week. And so it's just, you know, I think that the numbers are bearing that out. Are you finding that to be, is that an accurate kind of representation? Or, I mean, is it somewhere in that ballpark? Or what are you seeing as being the most concerning trend related to this?
Right, right. In fact, just to clarify that stat further, I think it was 26% of weekly attendees. So men that attended church every week. Now, that was a lower number than the general population, and that was a lower number than people that generally called themselves Christian. Those numbers were higher, but even among weekly attenders, these are committed Christian men,
mm-hmm.
and a quarter of them are looking at pornography within a week of that study. And is this what we're seeing? Well, there's another study that came out that was conducted by Barna. It was released in October last year, that found, you know, really, it was around 65% of men had looked at pornography within the past month. So there's a significant involvement with pornography among American men and among Christian men. You know, they're engaged with this material at some level, and that's just something. We can say, like it or not, well, no one likes it, but that's the fact. That's the reality of our situation today.
Mm-hmm.
And the longer we go without talking about it, the worse that gets.
Yeah.
And so I really think, you know, in response to the women you mentioned, believe me, I feel for the women today. I don't experience the situation they have, obviously, but the longing for a decent man is something I've been hearing for a decade or more among young Christian women, And we're coming to a place where I think we just have to understand it's going to be hard to find a man who's not influenced by pornography in some way. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that poses, you know, women are going to have a choice to make here. They can run away from men involved with pornography. They can ignore the pornography use, and I'm not sure I would advocate that at all. But there's a third way here, and I think it's working for redemption. It's working for transformation, and I think women do have a part to play in that, in helping motivate men to become, really to live up to their calling as men of God. And I think men are struggling with that today. Pornography is a part of that, but there's a deep spiritual component in this as well. And I think men need to be called to a higher standard, and women are a motivating influence for men. So there's a lot of opportunity for grace here. And I think men need it, but they also need to be called to a higher standard as well.
Sure. Well, I thought, you know, it's interesting you say that, because I thought a lot of that played out in the stories within the documentary. And I, you know, there were so many recurring themes of, you know, the shame surrounding pornography use, and the kind of the it's weird, because you think, you know, here's someone that's caught up in an addictive behavior that is sinful, but at the same time they were very much trying to manage that sin, and there were a lot of especially the men in it who talked about trying to right their wrongs and strive for almost a perfectionism, you know, and in the, if I could just stop doing this, if I could, you know, shore up my behavior over here, if I could, you know, and, but all cloaked in darkness, and they found themselves kind of on the hamster wheel of not being able to do that, obviously. Are there different motivators? I mean, for, I think a lot of us are just like, how does someone get into porn? I mean, obviously, we're all exposed to images in our culture. Like you said, this is nothing new. Most men are going to have some exposure to porn or some. What, to move into an addiction to pornography, what are the hooks, and are they unique for men and women?
Well, I think they are unique. And that's one of the things that that's teased out a little bit in the documentary, that people come to this in different ways. But one of the things we just, again, I wish we were having a more clear and robust national conversation about this. And a lot of this stems from the fact that kids are being exposed at very young ages to pornographic images. And we know from research, neuroscience research on childhood development, that young people's brains just aren't able to assimilate these images the way adult mature brains are. And so you have young people being exposed to something that they don't understand and can't quite comprehend, and it becomes a kind of a building block in their sexual template. And it's, you know, most of the images they're exposed to are very harmful and destructive. It's not simply, you know, an oil painting from the 17th century that has a nude woman. There's very graphic material that they're being exposed to, and they just don't know what to do with it. Mm-hmm. At the same time, and not all of them, but some of them they're confronted with this mix of shame and kind of forbiddenness, but also excitement. And especially for young boys, there's something very exciting about seeing, you know, a naked woman. There's something very exciting for adult men about seeing a naked woman. And I think that's a part that women need to understand, is that the female body is very attractive to men. What we have here is a perversion or a corruption of a God-given desire that draws the sexes together. Mm-hmm. That's a good thing to find, for men and women to find one another attractive and to find themselves, be sexually attracted to another. Mm-hmm. That's God's design. But what's happened with sin, and especially through pornography, is it's deeply corrupted and distorted into something that's not godly at all. And so it takes a good desire and twists it into something shameful and harmful. Mm. But, you know, a lot of people are drawn into this because they're exposed at an early age, and they just don't have the tools to deal with it. And I think that's, you know, that may be a separate conversation, but there's really a responsibility parents have to equip their kids for these harmful images and how to just how to understand them and how to deal with them once they're exposed. And I think parents can do that work. They just need help being equipped for that.
Yeah. Well, I know in the documentary, speaking of the, again, the shame surrounding this, and again, when it is cloaked in darkness, one of the girls who was in the doc and had experienced years of or pornography addiction talked about being in college and showing up and being called into, you know, one of the, what was it, like a dean's office or something, and having a red file put in front of her that detailed her internet history, and it was all pornography, and it was like looking her in the face, and she, it was her moment of feeling, and for the first time being exposed, and having that, you know, that behavior put in front of her in on paper, and how then she said that the, you know, the person said, yeah, but obviously this can't be you, and so we just need an explanation for that. And how it was just crazy for her saying, you know, that is me. That is me. Why doesn't anyone know that that's me? Why doesn't anyone believe that that's me? And how, you know, eventually for her, she was able to bring that into the light and to speak it. And I know, I think it was one of your experts, is it Jeff Stirrer or Stoyer in the... in the doc.
Right. Yeah, Jeff.
Yeah, he actually said you can't fully heal without being seen by others. Can you explain, Daniel, why that is so important to put an addiction like that in the light rather than deal with it privately or just say, well, this can be between me and God. I'm just going to deal with it with God.
Right, right. Well, first, I just want to acknowledge, I mean, there you know, you have women listeners here that are going to be feeling at this moment exposed, afraid, ashamed, just the fact that, and I think it's a particular shame that women feel about this because it's so often perceived as only a man's problem. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we speak of a double standard between men and women's sexuality, and I think that's true here, that we see men as visual and women as relational, as if the two never mix at all, and I just don't think that's true anymore. With is the way we've become such a digital age, everything's visually oriented now, and I think that's changing kind of the brain chemistry of women as well. So they're more susceptible to this visual imagery than maybe they were in the past. But it's very hard for women, in particularly, it's very hard for women in particular to admit this because of that double standard. But, you know, that I think that's the brilliance of this film, is because it weaves all these stories together. And I think one of the key messages of this film is that we're in this together. Mm-hmm. And I think that would be the takeaway I'd want people to have, is that we're in this together, and we can work together to solve this and to bring healing, or we can keep our distance from one another and stay stuck and hurting and in pain and alone. And I think that's the point you were getting to, is mm-hmm. why do we need to be seen by others?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a Latin phrase that I like. It, you know, we don't, you know, most people don't speak Latin. Well, no one speaks Latin, but, you know, there's a Latin phrase that explains this really well. It's called, the words are incurvatus in se. And the phrase means to be turned in upon oneself. And this is how the medieval church understood sin. It's a turning in upon oneself. And this is exactly what happens with pornography use. It turns a person inward so that there's a complete bubble of isolation around that person. So the sexual desire is only to serve self, and really everything else and everyone else is expendable around that. So to be healed, to find healing and transformation, means to get out of oneself. You have to get out of that distorted sense of self and that distorted sexuality that you've been caught up in. And that really does require being seen and known by others, whether that's friends, whether that's a pastor or clergy members, whether that's family members. All of those people can play a role in helping draw someone out of himself or herself.
Yeah.
And that's really, it's not a suggested part of healing or recovery. It's an absolute. It's required because we just can't. It's like they say in AA, you know, you're thinking, your stinking thinking is what got you here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, by relying on yourself, that's how you found yourself in this meeting. You have to rely on others because you can't do it yourself.
Yeah. And that's what I thought was so great. And just the stories reflected there was that, you know, for some of them, it was their spouses along with them who had walked through with them. And they said, you know, I just wanted to know the truth. And how, I think it was even shared in the film, how so many spouses will choose to stay as long as, you know, as long as they know they can be part of the fight and they feel like they're not being lied to. And, you know, you're not abandoned. And ultimately, the story truly being coming back to you're not abandoned by God himself. And I liked what one of the guys said. In fact, he said, in relation to his own struggle, he said, when it shifted from I need to maintain perfection to I need to maintain a relationship with Christ so he can perfect me, that made all the difference. And how he had to relinquish control and stop trying to manage and stop trying to cloak and stop trying to be something that he knew he couldn't be in his own strength. I thought that was very powerful. So, Daniel, as we close here, can you just explain a little bit of what you're hoping this film to accomplish? How can people get more information about it? What do you, you know, where do you see it going from here?
Yeah, Lisa, I think what I'm hoping is that this film can start that conversation, certainly for individuals who are struggling, but also particularly for churches. To me, this is a fantastic tool for a pastor or a youth leader or someone in a position of influence in a church to safely bring up a very sensitive and difficult topic. And I would do it in the context of simply saying, this is a problem we're dealing with as a culture, and this is a problem we're dealing with as a church. Let's do this together. And you can do that. You can show a documentary film like this without, you know, singling anyone out. Oh, okay, everyone's struggling with pornography, come to the meeting Tuesday night, you know. That's not the way to do it. You talk about it as a struggle that we're having as a culture and as a church, and let's find solutions together. And this kind of film addresses the topic so compassionately and so well. It's inspired. The strange thing, Lisa, and tell me if you disagree, but I thought it was very inspiring. By the time you got to the end, there really is hope.
Yeah.
There really is healing. There really is recovery. And the church is the best place to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, and I've said this for years, if we start to do sexuality right, if we start to offer this hope and healing in the church openly, I think people are going to flock through our doors to get it because the culture is seriously wounded by this. Mm-hmm. And I don't think much of the culture even wants this. There's just no alternative that they see. So we've got to be out front with the alternative. So you don't have to live like this. You don't have to be using people. You don't have to be caught in an addiction or isolation. We're in this together, and we'll be there with you. So, again, I think this film really is one of the best tools I've seen in the, you know, more than a decade of work I've been doing on this.
Mm-hmm.
One of the best tools to begin that conversation. And, again, you know, there's follow-up resources, and I know Focus on the Family has an excellent counseling care line that people can call to find counseling referrals and things like that. So I've been promoting this among churches and trying to lead discussion groups with it. And if people want to learn more, they can come to our website at brushfiresfoundation.org, and we'll have links to the film and other resources available to people.
Well, awesome. And thanks for being a part of it. We'll definitely get the word out here. And those of you listening, you know, if you want to share any of your thoughts related to this, certainly would love to have people experience the film and then give your thoughts related to that. Because, again, something that's not necessarily going away in our culture in a fallen world. But like Daniel said, there is hope. And certainly that hope needs to start right here within the church. So thanks, Daniel, for being part of this.
Well, Lisa, I just want to thank you and the Boundless team for addressing this topic. And I, like you said, I know you've done it before, but this is a big part of it. It's just opening up that discussion. So I really appreciate being on the show with you and being a part of that.
Absolutely.
Rushing past, I get caught up and I move too fast. Another day is spent working hard to keep my pace, trying to win the human race. But somehow I forget that you're in control of all this mess. You got the whole world in your hands, got the whole wide world in your hands, and every little thing is under your command. So I will trust your plans. You've got the whole world in your hands. You've got the whole world in your hands.
As we finish out the show, we are here with our inbox question, and I'm very pleased to have Harry, one of our counselors here at Focus on the Family, in the studio. Welcome.
Thank you.
Great.
It's my pleasure to be here.
Yay. Well, here's a question that we're going to have you address, coming from one of our listeners. It says, I've been pursuing a wonderful woman, but a few days after our first date, she started pulling back. This really confused and hurt me because I had emotionally invested in this relationship. How should I have protected myself from that hurt and disappointment? Does guarding my heart somewhat guarantee being safe from emotional hurt?
Well, I think as most of us have learned, there are no guarantees in relationship. I think that one of the unfortunate dynamics of our culture right now, and specifically of dealing with Christians, is that we put the pursuit of interpersonal relationships, our pursuit of relationships with other people, ahead of our pursuit of our relationship with God. And so it's not as if we want to be protective of ourselves or guard ourselves, although the scripture does tell us in Proverbs and Philippians to guard our hearts, and that God himself will guard our hearts. His peace will guard our hearts and our minds. Our pursuit of him is to create in us a peace and a comfort and a stability and a maturity that then, as we pursue relationships with other people, and specifically those of the opposite sex that we want to be in relationship with, everything is guided then by our relationship with him. And we are to be intimate with him. We are to be passionate about him. This is the way the scripture describes our relationship with God. And so that kind of not just guards, but guides us as we pursue our relationships with other people. Our culture has given us many mixed messages, and many of them are very destructive as far as relationships are concerned, whereas the Bible gives us principles for being in healthy relationship. And so as we are desiring to be healthy with God and with other people, we have to be very much aware of the conflicting messages that our culture is sending, and to filter through them so that we are not pursuing other people in a very unhealthy, damaging way. So as I am seeking to be in relationship with other people, it's going to be something that does involve being guarded and guided and protected, because God wants the best for both of us. If I'm pursuing a woman and she backs away from me, well, that's happening for a reason. And I may be over-investing myself emotionally and need to step back myself. Unfortunately, many of us are seeking relationships based on the meeting of needs. And there are gaps within us and gray areas and voids and that kind of thing that the Lord is trying to speak to us and to cause us to grow and mature so that we can have healthy, productive relationships. If we are in hot pursuit of someone, which involves over-investing ourselves emotionally, that is going to be hurtful. We are setting ourselves up for hurt and pain and damage. I am to be in hot, passionate pursuit of God so that my pursuit of other people will then be balanced and will be healthy, and I will have a very solid self-awareness. And so then the people that I pursue, I will be then aware of them as well. And then hopefully they will have a solid self-awareness from their relationship with Christ. And our pursuit of each other will be something that will be healthy and balanced and stable. It will be comfortable. There will be that peace from God that guards our hearts. And we will be more relaxed. We won't be so intense about it, so in hot pursuit. Because God is creating that stability and giving us guidelines for being in relationship, healthy relationship with other people. I've been married for 32 years, and when my wife and I met, it was a comfortable thing. There wasn't an intensity, there wasn't this hot pursuit. Although we did feel strongly about each other, we became friends. We became good friends. We got to know each other, and we came to realize that God wanted us to be together. This was happening, and what was happening was beyond just us. And it wasn't just about my needs and her needs. And so we've been together, and we've worked through things and had a solid relationship through the years, but that's how it started. Mm-hmm. And I learned from many dating mistakes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. I think just one thing that jumped out at me in this question was basically after our first date, you know, he admits to being, he had emotionally invested a lot into the relationship. And I'm kind of wondering why that was happening after one date. And so to me, it's almost a gardening of the mind to begin with, because it sounds like there was a lot of him playing out this relationship beyond where it was actually going. And so I would say to start there and to understand what you're saying, Harry, and just, you know, we have to focus on what is being provided to us in Christ first to meet our needs and all those things so that we can then pour into a relationship with another person. So yes. Thanks for weighing in on that.
My pleasure.
All right, folks. Well, that is it for this week's show. As always, we want to hear from you. So do write to us at editor@boundless.org, and we'll get your question in the future, hopefully, or just share your thoughts over on the blog as well. We'd love to hear from you there. Otherwise, we will see you around next week. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the family.